Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Air pollution. That's at the center of an intense new study over Edmonton. Atmospheric scientist Brian Ween says lasers and airplanes will help his colleagues develop a 3D picture analysis of what's happening with our air. And the Manning Innovation Awards Foundation hosted a dinner recently to recognize the nominees from Northern Alberta. Turns out this part of the country is a hotbed for invention. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Ozone is one of those air pollutants that can make people who are sensitive to it very sick. Over the next 4 weeks, Environment Canada will engage in a complex study to gather detailed information to map air pollution over the city of Edmonton. Called Prairie 2005, it involves the use of airplanes, trucks, and fancy laser equipment dubbed Rascal and Cruiser. Brian Weens is an air quality scientist with Environment Canada who has helped design the study.
Basically, what we're looking at is it's an air quality study of the processes that are going on in Alberta that contribute to ozone and a particulate matter, fine particulate matter, which is often referred to as smog. So it's a way of studying what's actually making it, where is it coming from, and where is it going to.
What's involved in this project?
What's involved with the project is a number of different things. We have a couple of trucks. As you mentioned, we have Rascal, which is basically uses a laser to map out particles in the atmosphere. We also have a truck called Cruiser, which has got a whole bunch of different chemistry monitoring, air chemistry monitoring equipment on board. We're going to have two aircraft out. The Canadian Forest Service has a small, used to be a crop duster that's now used for monitoring air quality in the bunch of different chemistry in the atmosphere. And then we also have an aircraft that we're just developing for this project, which we're going to fly two different packages on there. One is going to be a laser borne or another LIDAR to map out particles from on top. And the other one is going to have another instrument that actually measures the size of particles and actually does chemistry, gives you exact chemistry species that are on the particles.
Why is it that you're looking at the air quality here?
There's a couple reasons. One is Alberta is unique in that it doesn't have an awful lot of upwind sources. We start with pretty clean air, and pretty well anything we have in terms of poor air quality or anything that's degraded is homegrown. The other thing is that we don't have a big problem yet, and we're in a situation now as we grow as a province, as industry grows, we want to be sure that we understand what's going on so that we can deal with it in an appropriate way.
Have you done this sort of mapping before?
Nothing quite this big. There's been a lot of projects that have been done by the province and various other agencies around the province, but in terms of bringing a whole bunch of different pieces together to form a comprehensive view over a city over a number of weeks, this is the first time this has been done in Alberta.
What do you hope to find from this?
We hope to find a couple things, and one of the ones that we're doing is we're using air quality models to guide how we're actually operating the program. So we're hoping to improve on our way of using air quality models to actually find the issues and to actually do the sampling. At the same time, those samples then help us develop the air quality models in terms of making them more representative. Once we know that, then we can also use those models to give guidance on places where we haven't done the sampling. So if we know how well the model performs in Edmonton, we can say, well, this is what we found there. This is what it would look like in Lloydminster. This is what it would look like in Calgary. This is what it would look like in Fort McMurray.
Now that you've got everything set up and you're ready to go, what is it that you know is going to be in the air in this Edmonton area?
That's a very good question. One of the neat things about Edmonton is that in many ways what comes into the atmosphere comes in three different places. We have the coal-fired power plants, which have sort of changed their configuration over the last number of years and installed some fairly up-to-date technology to minimize the pollution release. Then we get a little bit further to the east. You have the Edmonton City Center, which is a growing urban center now, just slightly over 1 million people with all the transportation that goes along with that. And then we have the industrial development on the east side of the city, which sort of has its own contribution from petrochemicals and chemical plants that's going on there. So what we're expecting to be able to find is sort of the unique signatures of those three broad contributors and put that into the context of what's happening in terms of background, if you like, what's actually coming into the area from far away.
How are you going to do this?
The first thing that we're going to do is every day we're going to have a very high-resolution super computer run model that gives a map of the air quality in the area based on a computer representation or a numerical representation of what's going on. In fact, we'll be running two models that Environment Canada runs to try and map those things out. Based on what those models predict, we're going to deploy the aircraft to sort of find the places that the models think something is happening. We'll fly the airplane through where the model thinks something is going on and compare the two results. then based on those kinds of things, in the longer term, what that'll help us do is improve the way the models represent what's going on in the atmosphere, find out things we don't understand, and in fact help us to sort of understand what we thought we understood before even better.
We're looking at the computer screen right now with the map on it. Could you describe to me what the routes are going to be? And you have both trucks, these laser or LIDAR trucks, and airplanes involved. So are they going to be at ground level? How high up are they going to be? Like, how is it actually going to work in that way?
That's one of the things that's really good about having airplanes, is you start to form a three-dimensional structure. There's been long-term air quality monitoring that's been done in Alberta by Alberta Environment and a variety of airsheds. So we have a pretty good idea what's going on at the ground at a lot of places. What we're going to do here is we're going to fill in a few of the holes that we think there are at the ground, and then we can fill in one of the big gaps, which is the atmosphere. So what we'll do is we have the existing sites that exist around Alberta, for example, at Tomahawk and at Violet Grove, and there's a whole bunch in the Fort Saskatchewan area. There's three in the city. We're going to put one out at Carvel, which is sort of the Environment Canada's radar site just west of the city, very near to Stony Plain. We're going to put two trucks actually southeast of the city at the provincial park, Lake Miquelon Provincial Park. And that's what we're going to have at the ground. And so those will be running continuously to collect data. Then what we'll do is we'll fly airplanes over top of them to sort of get a picture of what's going on vertically in the atmosphere, what's actually happening in three dimensions. And so we'll fly a grid that responds to the direction that the wind is coming from so that we can sort of see what did the air look like before it hit the source, what does it look like very close to the source, and what does it look like a little bit further downwind once the chemistry and the reactions have actually started to take place in the atmosphere.
I'm curious about the laser. What part does the laser play in this?
The laser is a really powerful tool because what it does is it sends out a pulse of light that actually reflects back off the particles in the atmosphere. The wavelengths of light that they're using are responsive to the kind of particles that actually are also associated with human health issues, for example. So what it does is it sends a pulse of light out 20 times a second and then waits for that pulse to come back, and they have a large telescope, about a 14 or 15-inch telescope, that monitors the return or what's reflected back from the particles. And it allows us to map out in about 3-meter cubes the kind of particles that are in the atmosphere.
What are the sorts of things that you've had to take into consideration when you have laid out the grid or the map of the way you're going to do it? Can you just do it any old way, or do you have to take into consideration wind and wind direction, that sort of thing?
We first of all, as air quality scientists, that's the first thing we look at. What's the wind direction? Where are the sources? How far downwind can we go, just in terms of seeing the chemistry? But there's some very practical things that we have to consider as well. One of, for example, is the laser is very powerful, and so we have to make sure that we can maintain eye safety considerations, or it's dangerous to the eyes. I guess the other way to put it, within 4,000 feet of the aircraft. So we have to make sure that we can make sure there's no other airplanes. It's not going to interfere with anybody. We don't turn the laser on, for example, until it's 4,000 feet above the ground or higher. The other aspect, of course, is there's an awful lot of air traffic in the Edmonton area, so we can't kind of fly at will. And so we've been negotiating with Air Traffic Control. NAV Canada is the organization that runs that, to try and come up with flight paths that are going to be compatible with other aviation in the area to minimize disruption and certainly to minimize risk.
What would be the emissions of concern in this area?
Some of the standard ones are the ones, anytime you burn anything at high temperature, it releases nitrogen oxides. And those react in the atmosphere to produce ozone, which is an irritant. And basically, if you get high enough levels, your eyes water and your nose burns and that sort of thing. And there's been a lot of health studies that have demonstrated that there's significant health effects with high ozone values. The other broad group that we have is particulate matter. Now, particulate matter comes out as either very fine particles, for example, the black stuff that you see out of an accelerating diesel truck or something like that. And that's what we call primary particulate matter. But there's a number of chemicals that react in the atmosphere to produce what we call secondary particulate. And so we're looking basically at primary and secondary particulates as well, because those again have been demonstrated to have a significant health effect, and so the better we understand them, the better we can deal with them.
What excites you about this project?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of things. I think it's a neat opportunity to bring together a bunch of disciplines. Oftentimes, the numerical modelers, the computer guys, are sort of stuck in their cubicle with their head near their keyboard, and the experimentalists are out in the field. And in this kind of an experiment, you're bringing two broad disciplines in terms of observational people and computer modelers together to work side by side. And I think that's one of the neat things, because you learn from each other and you're bringing together the two parts that really do depend very heavily on each other.
Thank you very much, Brian.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Brian Weens, an air quality scientist with Environment Canada in Edmonton. For almost a quarter of a century, the Manning Innovation Awards has recognized the achievements of inventors from all across Canada. Their brilliant ideas cover the gamut from a new way to make guitars to leading-edge technology and genetic research. While this year's winners won't be announced until September, the Awards Foundation held a dinner to recognize all the nominees from the Edmonton region. Edmonton has the distinction of producing the greatest number of nominations in all of Canada. Don Park is the executive director of the Manning Innovation Awards Foundation.
Charlotte started a couple of years ago with our Atlantic chapter in Halifax, and they felt that the nominees from that area should be given some recognition, and it's spread to Vancouver and now to Edmonton, and I think it's something that will be put into practice with all the chapters across Canada, is recognizing those innovators from that specific area.
You've had an awful lot of people from the Edmonton area. What do you think accounts for that?
I think that there's been a lot of good, strong innovation, and I guess the support from through the universities and just the right atmosphere in this province to support innovation. And I think the number of nominees we have right here this evening are a further recognition of that, as the strength of innovation in this province.
One of the things that really struck me this evening is the range of innovation and research that people are involved in, everything from some of this really high-tech and medical research right down to the creation of a new musical instrument from 2x4s. How on earth can you judge all of these? What are the criteria that you use in order to come up with the winners?
Well, there are five criteria we look at, and the first is the intellectual achievement of the innovation. The second is the uniqueness and originality. And then we go into development, whether the idea has gone into the development into a prototype and meets the expectations of the inventor. Then we look at the commercial success. You know, has the innovation reached the commercial market? Is it successfully local, regionally, nationally, internationally, looking at sales? And then that reflects on the social and economic recognition in Canada, the support of that part of the society.
Thank you very much, Don.
Thanks a lot.
That was Don Park, Executive Director of the Manning Innovation Awards Foundation. One of the special guests at the dinner for the Edmonton nominees was the new president of the University of Alberta, Dr. Indira Samarasekera.
I think what's important is that while research leads to discovery, it takes a special kind of person to take discovery and convert it into a product or a outcome that benefits society in a major way. And it's a lot of hard work and frequently not much reward initially. And so it's really important to recognize that kind of persistence, that kind of genius, that kind of energy that's required to make it happen.
This dinner tonight was to recognize all the nominees from the Edmonton area.
Yes.
What does that say to you as president of the University of Alberta?
I'm thrilled. I mean, my sense of the university and its potential, I think, was evidenced here. I know some of the nominees are from the area and some of the nominees are from within the university, but I think it's the combination of having people both in the private sector and the universities that have that same entrepreneurial spirit that makes it all happen. So, great. It bodes really well for the future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Indira Samarasekera, president of the University of Alberta. This year, there were 17 nominations from the Greater Edmonton area alone for the Manning Innovation Awards, and I had a chance to talk to some of the inventors during dinner.
My name is Kim Kenward, and I'm with 2020 Seed Labs.
And I'm Ralph Lang. I'm with the Alberta Research Council.
What is 2020 Seed Labs?
Well, we're the oldest private seed testing company in Canada, and we are the first ones to actually start systematically and routinely offering a DNA-based testing method for disease pathogens on seed.
You're one of the nominees for this year's Manning Innovation Award. What's the innovation?
Well, this is work that we developed at the Alberta Research Council, and we've now moved over to 2020. And it's a DNA-based test, which we can do in about 24 hours, and it detects the presence of a fungus called Fusarium graminearum on cereal grains. And Fusarium graminearum is a disease agent that can cause significant losses in yield and quality of the grain, but it also produces a toxin which can basically kill things if they eat too much of it. So it's a very significant health and agricultural concern. And it is seed-borne, so our DNA test allows us to quickly identify which seed is carrying that pathogen so you can avoid putting it in the ground and infecting your fields.
How were they testing for this before?
The previous test is based on a culture plate test. So you take the seed and you plate it out on agar. Then you let it grow up for about 7 days, and then you have to analyze it under a microscope to identify which of the fungus is actually present on the seed. And this requires a fair amount of labor and a very great deal of expertise on the person that's actually looking at the stuff under the microscope.
Ralph, what part did the Alberta Research Council play in this?
Well, we saw the need for the test in the first place. We participate with the Alberta government, with Alberta Agriculture and so on determining what are some of the upcoming threats, or what are some of the concerns of the farming public and so on have to deal with in the future. And we saw that Fusarium graminearum was definitely something there, and we wanted to address that. There's a piece of legislation called the Alberta Pest Act, and of course Fusarium graminearum is a listed pest on that. And so once something is listed, it becomes there's a need for testing and determining if this organism is moving in and how much of it is there. And PCR or DNA-based testing is a very quick and very sensitive way of doing that quickly and relatively cheaply.
Kimberly, what does it mean being nominated for a Manning Innovation Award?
Well, it's an honor, of course. It's very unexpected, and we were very pleased as a company to be asked to participate.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Richard Gerlach, and my company is Waterboy Solar Powered Pumps.
You've been nominated for a Manning Innovation Award for the solar pumps that you've developed. What exactly are they?
I design a varied line of solar powered pumps. In particular, the nomination had to do with my Solar Direct line of pumps that allow a farmer to pump water out of open water sources such as a dugout or a stream, lake, and also it has the ability to interchange pumps of different heights and with different capacities. And you have the option of running an aerator with the same system while it's not pumping water.
What makes this different from other pumps, that it's a real innovation?
Well, I've tried to do things a lot differently than a lot of the other solar pumps that are out there. There are other solar pumps out there. I find that some of them tend to not be easy to use, and sometimes they've had design flaws. Solar Direct gets away from batteries, which to me is always the weak spot of any solar powered system.
Why did you start looking at this?
I started looking at this years ago because at the time I didn't know that there were people out there who were building solar-powered pumps for cattle watering. I found out that there was competition when I had my first model designed, and I think a lot of it happened because it's a combination of backgrounds. I'm a junior high science teacher. That's where I was at the time. I came from a cattle farm background, and I looked at a lot of what we were dealing with on the farm, and I knew a lot of the research behind the value of good water and proximal water and health benefits and environmental benefits, and it seemed like an obvious thing to do. I think the other thing is that I got really excited about it because when I started working on it, I thought this is almost like a dream industry in a way, because there seemed to be no downside. There seemed to be no environmental downside. There didn't seem to be a financial downside. It seemed like it was the perfect sort of a thing to go into.
Congratulations, and thank you very much, Richard.
Well, thank you.
Hi, my name is Lauren Terrell, and I'm a professor at the University of Alberta in the Department of Medical Microbiology and Immunology, and I hold the chair, CIHR chair, and the Glaxo chair combined in virology.
You're a nominee now for the Manning Innovation Awards, and this has to do with the work that you've done over the years with hepatitis B. What is the specific product that you've been working on?
Well, in 1986, I had an idea how we might be able to find compounds that would be active against hepatitis B. Fall of 1986, early 1987, I met with a chemist at the University of Alberta, Dr. Morris Robbins, who unfortunately was planning to move to Brigham Young University at that time. He was an American and returned to the United States. But we continued to collaborate, and this work was done with Morris Robbins and myself. And we've developed a system. I developed a system that would screen antiviral compounds against hepatitis B viruses. There were no antivirals for hepatitis B at that time in the world. The treatment was limited to interferon. So we developed the first oral agent that could be used, a pill for hepatitis B, and it was a nucleoside analog. And as a result of this work, established a contract and collaborated with Glaxo, who sponsored a lot of this work. And Glaxo licensed the product from the University of Alberta. And the work led to the licensing in 1998 of lamivudine for the treatment of hepatitis B. Today it is licensed in over 120 countries worldwide to treat hepatitis B. And last year it sold about $312 million Canadian dollars worth.
When you look back to those early days, what was the big breakthrough for you?
Well, I think there was the first time we set up the system and we looked at some of the compounds that Morris Robbins had synthesized at the university, and we could see in a cell culture system that these compounds were completely decreasing the amount of virus in the cell cultures by 10,000 times, 99.9% dropping the virus. And when we first looked at those results, we knew we had something very exciting because nobody had ever seen that at that time.
How bad a problem is hepatitis B for the world?
Well, that's a very good question. It's a huge problem worldwide. You know, we hear an awful lot about AIDS. There are 39 million people in the world today with AIDS. There are 350 million people that carry hepatitis B. People with AIDS without treatment, all of them will die from their AIDS. People with hepatitis B, not as many will die. But each year there are between 1.4 and 3 million people that die from hepatitis B. Hepatitis B is the commonest environmental cause of cancer in the world. There's about 1 million people that die of hepatocellular carcinoma, which is liver cancer caused by hepatitis B. This is a disease that is very common in Southeast Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, Eastern Europe. It is a major problem in those countries.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was Dr. Lorne Terrell of the University of Alberta. He was just one of the 17 Edmonton nominees for this year's Manning Innovation Awards. Also present at the dinner recognizing the nominees was Dave Mitchell. Dave is well known for his work in developing Alberta's oil patch, including the establishment of Encana. He is also the president and founder of the Manning Innovation Awards Foundation.
Well, I started it really because I'd had a growing feeling for some time that Canadians simply weren't being recognized at home. You could take a person and they do wonderful things here and very few noticed it and very few cared. The same person go down to the States and there they would get attention as well as the financial reward that often is more possible there at the level in the States than Canada. And it bothered me. One morning, I don't say this was the magic eureka moment, but I've been thinking about this a lot, and I turned on the radio, and here was Davy Crockett playing. And I thought to myself, if Davy Crockett had been born in Canada, I bet I'd never hear that song. And so it built, and the 75th anniversary of the province was around at that time. I got thinking about what we were doing in regard to these people. These are good people, and I wish you would. I could get away with telling you by the hour who's out there and what they do. You heard tonight about Keith Brimacombe because that was a direct connection to the new president of the university. But they're out there all the way, and I sit here and I can think of those people that did the DNA accelerator deal, advanced the genome progress by probably 5 to 10 years quicker, a marvelous worldwide event. I think of people like Schindler, Dr. Schindler, who came up with ways of detecting and eventually causing a sort of a ban on use of phosphates and so on. He's here. I think of the fellow in down in Ontario that figured out a way to stop dogs barking because he was going to have to destroy them. And I see him, and I see the wonderfully intelligent lady down in Fredericton who came up with a new theory on effusivity, as I could explain, and which in fact is being used to cause much better prescription medicine quality, and is one of our big customers, in fact, in pharmaceutical firms. And the list goes on and on, but it's hard for me to stop. They're all out there.
You could have named this after yourself, but you named it instead after the former premier of Alberta, Ernest Manning. Why?
That's an excellent question, which I rarely had been asked. I'm a Calgary fellow. I am born there, and I've worked there, and I have worked and lived somewhat in other parts, but not for much. Alberta's my home. And when I wanted to do this, I realized that Dave Mitchell in Calgary, who was trying to create a national event, a national situation here, needed some support. Someone in Toronto would say, so who's Dave Mitchell? And I scratched my head on this, and I was trying to think of who might have a national presence. And then I bumped into Ernest Manning, or coming out of the McDonald Hotel, and we rode to the airport together, which used to be closer to downtown then. And I told him of this, and then it occurred to me, then I said, would you consider attaching your name to this? And by having Ernest Manning's name, and I admired the man, I think he's a terrific person, why, the next thing I had, the head of Bell Canada agreed to come on and be a trustee. And Tuzel Wilson, the father of plate tectonics, one of the world's great all-time geologists in Toronto, he agreed to come on and be a trustee. So I had a national credibility, which I could not have done on my own. Now, in all over a period, I've been chair of different companies and on boards of the banks and been the governor of the Hudson's Bay Company, and I maybe could have a chance of pulling it off. But then, not 25 years ago, Dave Mitchell Calgary was a so what.
What do you see as being the future for innovation in Canada?
I think, I know Canadians have the talents. I sense, and I believe others sense, a growing awareness of the importance of encouraging this at the governmental level, and clearly it exists at the corporate level and so on. So, to my mind, this country should go onward and upward in the fields of innovation. And the challenge always, it has been for a long time, is to have enough attraction for these people to stay and work here. But even if they don't, and I don't like to lose any of them, some of them come back and some of them remain Canadians at heart, and they add something to the world. And if it happens to have a Canadian accent but living in California, that's not my first choice, but it's a good second choice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dave Mitchell, president and founder of the Manning Innovation Awards Foundation. This year's winners will be announced in September at the ceremony in Winnipeg. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Alberta Ingenuity, the University of Lethbridge, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Alberta Conservation Association, Science Alberta Foundation, Ducks Unlimited Canada, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Innovation and Science, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Crocher.